The message tonight is from Matthew chapter 12, verses 1 to 8. That's where we'll be spending our time. The other passages are Mark 2, 23 to 28, and Luke 6, 1 to 5. Christ's defense of his Sabbath action to legalists. After Jesus healed the paralytic on the Sabbath in John 5, 1 to 9, the religious leaders had critiqued him for healing that day. But Jesus had then directed the conversation to his deity and answered his critics on that claim. So the combative legalistic religious leaders returned to trying to condemn Jesus on what they held was his violation of the Sabbath prohibition when he let his disciples pick and eat grain on another Sabbath day. So Christ then defended his actions on that Sabbath day, and we're going to study it just in Matthew 12, 1-8, with a great lesson on religious legalism. So we study the event for our insight, our application, and edification. I want to read the verses, and then we'll look at them. Matthew chapter 12, verses 1 through 8. At that time, Jesus went on the Sabbath day through the grain field, and his disciples were hungry and began to pluck the ears of grain and to eat. But when the Pharisees saw it, they said unto him, "Behold, your disciples do that which is not lawful to do upon the Sabbath day." But he said unto them, "Have you not read what David did when he was hungry, and they that were with him, how he entered into the house of God and did eat the showbread, which was not lawful for him to eat, neither for them which were with him, but only for the priests? Have you not read in the law how that on the Sabbath day the priests in the temple profane the Sabbath and are blameless? But I say unto you that in this place is one greater, or is an entity greater than the temple. But if you had known what this means, 'I will have mercy and not sacrifice,' you would not have condemned the guiltless. For the Son of Man is Lord, even of the Sabbath day." One Sabbath day, Jesus went through a grain field, and his disciples, who were hungry, began to pick some of the heads of grain and to eat them. Now, the Mosaic law in Deuteronomy chapter 23, verse 25, let one pick grain from another man's field to satisfy his immediate hunger if he did not use a sickle to harvest it or harvest a lot of it. You could go through a grape vineyard, and you could pick and eat the grapes. You just couldn't go through with a container and collect it into a container. So there was a limit. And this law was a provision for people who were poor and who were hungry so that they could always go. I've talked to many a farmer, especially in California, and they said, you know, if there are people who are starving to death, look at all the food that I'm growing out here. There's no need for that. And they would be the first ones to let people eat if they needed to stay alive, eat of the food that they had right there. They just didn't want someone coming along and, of course, harvesting it, because that was their income as well. But this was a special provision in the law. However, the Pharisees thought that this activity that day violated the Sabbath prohibition of working. So they charged Jesus with letting his disciples violate the Sabbath. They didn't charge him with stealing. They charged him with violating the Sabbath. And that is a capital offense, according to Exodus chapter 35, verse 2. If a person violates the Sabbath, he's supposed to be put to death. Well, the Pharisees were actually the ones who had violated God's intent behind his institution of the Sabbath. We go way back in history, and we find that there's a completely different viewpoint that God had of the Sabbath when he instituted. Back in Genesis chapter 2, verses 1 through 3, God had sanctified and blessed the Sabbath, for in it he had rested from his creation work. Now, really, it wasn't that much work for God. He just said, and it was. He said it, it was. But he set a pattern there for man. However, when mankind turned against God after the Noahic flood, pagan man distorted the seventh day with his view of deity, thinking that the Sabbath was an unlucky day when one was to avoid all pleasure. And he saw himself as a slave to despotic, fickle gods. Very different from the view of the true God, and very different from the intent that God had set forth in the Sabbath. So to critique these pagan views, when God gave the law under Moses, he instituted the Sabbath observance as a testimony to the world through Israel that he was a God of grace who gave man refreshing rest that day. It wasn't an unlucky day. God was not a fickle God. He was not a despotic God. He was a wonderful God, a kind God, who gave people rest, and he encouraged them on that day. And the reason God made it a capital offense if you violated it is because this involved their testimony to the world the world needed to know about Israel's God being a gracious God. And so God, you know, made it a requirement that they observe the Sabbath. But it wasn't hard to do it. That all they had to do is just relax and rest on that particular day. So Christ gave a fivefold defense of his Sabbath action to his legalistic critics in Matthew chapter 12, verses 3 through 8, that reflected his initial intent of the Sabbath observance to be a day of rest and refreshment from a gracious God. First, Jesus used an Old Testament precedent to claim that addressing livelihood needs took precedence over the technical obedience to the Mosaic law. In Matthew chapter 12, verses 3 and 4, he referred to 1 Samuel chapter 21, verses 1 to 6, where David and his men entered the tabernacle and ate the showbread, a capital offense and technical violation of the Mosaic law. Numbers chapter 1, verse 51, if you even came near to the temple or the tabernacle and you were not a priest or a Levite, you were to be put to death. In Leviticus chapter 24, 5 to 9, only the priests were allowed to eat of the showbread. David and his men needed that bread to survive in their flight from Saul, so it was right for them to eat it. Now, in that situation, David had lied to the priest, which got the priest in trouble, and David was wrong for lying. But David's life was at risk because he had to hurry up and flee. But in those days, if you fled and you didn't have food, especially if you're going out into a wilderness area, you're going to starve. So David knew that he needed to have the food, but he didn't have time to go back to Saul's kitchen and say, "Could I have some food?" because he would have been dead. So if this is a situation where David needed it and God gave the permission. I've used the illustration like this before. Often when girls are around the ages of 11 or 12, they get into blood sugar problems. And we had this happen one time. A girl just fainted dead away in the service. And so if that were the case, if it was a communion day, it would be perfectly right for us to take a couple cups of communion here and pour it down the throat of a young woman who's fainted, and so she can have that blood sugar so she can be revived. And that's not sacrilegious at all. That's a life-saving situation, or possibly, worse. We don't know. But that's what God did. When he made these regulations, he wanted these regulations set up so that people would honor him. But when it came to saving human life, that takes precedence. So that's something that Jesus brought up. Second, Jesus used an Old Testament precedent to teach that performing God's ministry assignments took precedence over the technical obedience of the Mosaic law. In verse 5, the priests performed their servile work of performing regular as well as extra sacrifices at the temple altar on Sabbath days as required by the law in technical violation of the Sabbath prohibition. In Numbers chapter 28, verses 1 to 10. In fact, not only did they have to perform the regular Sabbath, sacrifices, but there were extra sacrifices. And a number of these sacrifices, they would skin the animals. I talked to Dan LaPlante one time, and he's been involved in butchering animals and skinning them. And he told me one time, "Have you ever considered, Pastor, how much work is involved?" He said, "It is a ton of work to skin a cow, if you're going to butcher a cow, for example, and skin it." He says it takes a tremendous amount of work. And so when these priests were butchering these animals and putting them on the altar, they were working hard, and often the Levites would help them. So this was a violation, technically a violation of the Sabbath, but you had to have the worship services go forward on the Sabbath. In fact, they had to perform more sacrifices on the Sabbath than on other days. So this is a situation where God's ministries needed to be performed on the Sabbath, so it was right for the priests to do so. That shows the importance of ministries. Ministries in the local church also are very, very important to God. And so we need to be willing to put aside other issues and practices that we have so that we can actually have a ministry. Third, Jesus taught that something, namely the kingdom of God that he had come to offer Israel, was greater than the temple, where the priests technically violated the Sabbath day by working on the Sabbath to provide worship in Israel. The kingdom that Jesus was presenting was far more important than what was going on in the temple at the time. He was the Messiah. He was coming to present the kingdom. And then fourth, Jesus used an Old Testament precedent in Hosea chapter 6, verse 6, to teach that showing mercy superseded even the sacrifices that the priests performed and technically violating the Sabbath. and showing mercy to his hungry disciples so they could pick and eat grain on the Sabbath superseded keeping the Sabbath. Now, Jesus wasn't violating the Sabbath here. He wasn't doing servile work. They weren't working for money. This wasn't a livelihood. So, but Jesus was doing by allowing his men and taking them through the grain field on the Sabbath was completely in keeping with the intent of God on the Sabbath. And that is for man to find rest and refreshment. These men were not doing servile work. They were hungry. They needed to eat. They didn't have the food. So Jesus let them go through the field. He led them actually through the field so that they would eat. And they did. So this is exactly what God wanted them to do. And then fifth, Jesus taught that he, as the prophesied God incarnate Son of Man, notice he used the term Son of Man here in Matthew chapter 12, verse 8. And the Son of Man is always a reference to Daniel chapter 7, verses 13 and 14, where the Son of Man ascends in the clouds of heavens. He goes up to the throne of God. He's put on the throne of God, and all people worship him, bow down and worship him. It's the technical word in Aramaic for worship. So Jesus, as the Son of Man, God incarnate, was the Lord of the Sabbath. So as Lord of the Sabbath, he had absolute authority to dictate what was lawful to do on the Sabbath. So there are several arguments here that the Lord Jesus used. So when Israel's religious leaders critiqued Jesus for letting his disciples pick and eat grain on the Sabbath, Jesus reflected God's initial intent in instituting the Sabbath observance of having Israel testify to pagan Gentiles that he, the one true God, was gracious and had given the Sabbath as a gracious rest for man. So the oppressive rules that Israel's religious leaders had added to the Sabbath law had only violated God's initial intent in his institution of the Sabbath rests. So Jesus corrected the oppression of the religious leaders with the grace of God. Tremendous. So may we adhere to the intent behind God's biblical directives to us and uphold the grace of God. There are rules, there are regulations that God has in the New Testament for in the church. And those rules, those regulations are for various purposes, the various intents. But sometimes people can come up with concoctions or additions to the rules that actually violate the intent that God had in giving the rules. And God doesn't want us to violate the intent. Rules are not given as a purpose in themselves. Rules are given as a means of achieving another objective. That's glorifying God, honoring the Lord, functioning in a lawful or in an orderly manner, promoting the grace of God. And so we always have to keep in mind the intent of God in this. Yesterday we celebrated, my wife and I celebrated our 50th wedding anniversary, and she's got wedding pictures here. Michelle has requested, so the ladies could look at that afterwards. Yesterday, Nadine took me through some of those pictures. I hadn't looked at them for a long time. And we discussed last week how different kinds of people we are now than we were 50 years ago. And we can certainly testify to the grace of God. He's been very gracious. But what he was gracious. We were committed to serving the Lord then, but he was gracious in discipling us together. So he was involved in changing us and moving us along together. And we're so grateful for the grace of God. We were both at the time coming out of very legalistic backgrounds, and we're trying to make adjustments as to what that meant, and it was going to take a number of years beyond that. But it's amazing when you look back, and of course it doesn't seem like 50 years at all, good grief. But it's gone by like that, you know, very, very fast. But it's only by the grace of God that he has graciously been good to us. And that's how any marriage today that lasts today is a product of the grace of God. We're just human beings. We're all sinners. We're saved by grace, but it's because of the grace of God that we can survive. So I would encourage, I see a number of young people here who aren't married yet, and that's great. I love to be able to talk and give recommendations there. Always depend on the grace of God. Depend on the grace of God as to the partner that you choose in life, and then continue to rely upon the grace of God as you go through life. And God will have, he has a wonderful way of overseeing everything, protecting, guarding, and providing. And he'll guide you all the way, but we really need to keep a clear head in regards to the fact that we need God's unmerited favor for us.